Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we were talking about an article by Salt Lake Tribune journalist Peggy Fletcher Stack titled, Mormon Church Releases Photos of Seer Stone Used by Founder Joseph Smith. I want to go back and recap a statement that was made in this piece and then discuss what role did the seer stone really play in the translation of the Book of Mormon. She says in this article, she said that Smith said he was led to a set of buried gold plates which recorded the history of ancient American civilization and a visit to this continent by Jesus Christ. The Mormon founder said he was able to translate the Reformed Egyptian language using spiritual tools, including his quote-unquote seer stone. As we mentioned yesterday, we've had a lot of Mormons who really thought we were making it up whenever we would bring up the subject of the seer stone, and I can imagine why, because most of the artist's renditions showing Joseph Smith translating the plates do not show him with his face in a hat. Now, that may change now that these new pictures have come out showing what the seer stone really looked like, but the fact is, up until this point, we've not seen anything like that, at least produced by the Mormon Church.
Typically, the picture is Joseph Smith using the plates and kind of using his fingers to kind of give that information over to the scribe, and that's not accurate. But how many people believe the church art and consider that to be authoritative?
And they try to blame it on an artist's conception. But you have to remember, folks, there's not going to be a painting or a picture or a lithograph by an artist in a Mormon publication that has not been commissioned by the leadership of the Mormon Church. So an artist can paint the picture, certainly, but he's going to paint or draw really what the church wants in its publication. And I have to assume that for the most part, they don't want a picture of Joseph Smith's face in a hat.
That's, I think, misrepresenting the historical part where so many church members are relying on what the church is telling them. And as you say, if that was commissioned by the church, why would you want something that's inaccurate for people to get the false impression?
Well, and as we mentioned yesterday, I feel the reason that they are now being transparent, that's the word that's being thrown about right now, is only because they've been pressured to do so. But when this article talks about Joseph Smith using these spiritual tools, including his seer stone, it might be good to read an account given by Russell M. Nelson, who is currently serving as an apostle of the Mormon Church. And due to the death of Boyd K. Packer and L. Tom Perry, he is now the president of the Quorum of the Twelve. He is the next in line to become the president of the church should Thomas Monson pass away. Back in 1993, he wrote an article that was published in the July issue, 1993, of Ensign Magazine. And in that article, he recounts how Joseph Smith used the seer stone by citing an account given by David Whitmer, who was one of the three witnesses of the Book of Mormon. What did he say in that July 1993 edition?
And the name of the article is A Treasured Testament, and he quotes right out of an address to all believers in Christ. This is what he says. Joseph Smith would put the seer stone into a hat and put his face in the hat, drawing it closely around his face to exclude the light. And in the darkness, the spiritual light would shine. A piece of something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing. One character at a time would appear, and under it was the interpretation in English. Brother Joseph would read off the English to Oliver Cowdery, who was his principal scribe, and when it was written down and repeated to Brother Joseph to see if it was correct, then it would disappear, and another character with the interpretation would appear. Thus the Book of Mormon was translated by the gift and power of God, and not by any power of man.
Now, I think most Latter-day Saints, when they hear the expression that it was translated by the gift and power of God, that it gives the implication that this was translated exactly the way it should have read in the Reformed Egyptian to English. It's going from a Reformed Egyptian to an English translation, and it's supposed to tell us exactly what that Reformed Egyptian was saying. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, right.
Well, here's the problem. Apparently, that's not really what a lot of Mormon scholars believe. I'm going to play for you now a statement that was made by Royal Skousen. Royal Skousen has been very involved in the manuscripts, the two manuscripts that were used in the production of the Book of Mormon. The original manuscript, which was written by the scribes themselves, and then a printer's manuscript, which was a copy of the original manuscript. Listen carefully to what Royal Skousen says when it comes to the translation process and how what Joseph Smith said was written down by the scribes. It's about a minute and 40 seconds, but the attention I want to bring to is about 45 seconds into the piece. Listen carefully to what Royal Skousen says.
There are two manuscripts of the Book of Mormon, the original manuscript or the dictated manuscript. This is the one the scribes wrote as Joseph Smith dictated the text, chiefly coming from April through June of 1829. Oliver Cowdery is the main scribe. Well, the one problem with the original manuscript is that in 1841, Joseph Smith put it in the cornerstone of the Nauvoo House. Apparently, his idea was to preserve it. Well, what he did was help destroy it. And the seal broke on the cornerstone and water got in and then mold ate away at it. It was there for 41 years. It has lots of interesting errors because they misheard sometimes or misinterpreted what Joseph said. Then when they prepared the text for the printer, they made a new copy. They didn't want to take in the original for fear they might lose it. So they made this copy. It took from about August 1829 to January 1830. Oliver, again, is the main scribe, and the typesetter set the 1830 chiefly from that printer's manuscript. The errors in the printer's manuscript are visual errors where they misread what they were viewing. They're not listening errors, but visual errors. And we only have 28% of the original, but we have virtually all of the printers.
Now you notice Royal Skousen said that there were errors, that the scribes did not hear Joseph Smith accurately, and so errors crept into this. Now my question is, based on the story that Russell M. Nelson recounts in his July 1993 article in the Ensign magazine, how much of a margin of error do you really see? Let's read that portion again, how he would read it to the scribe, and then what would the scribe do?
And when it was written down and repeated to Brother Joseph to see if it was correct, then it would disappear, and another character with the interpretation would appear.
So Smith would read it to the scribe would read it back, and if it was correct, it would go on to the next set of characters. This is how the seer stone was being used. My point being is, how do you have any errors in it if that's the way it's being done? There's no margin of error if it won't go on to the next set of characters unless it's read back accurately. What are they reading back? What they have written down.
And we only have about one quarter of the original manuscript. We don't have three quarters of it. I wonder how many other errors and in what areas that there are that we just don't know about because that manuscript has been lost.
Well, and he talks about the fact that there are some mistakes in the printer manuscript, the copy of the original that we do have in existence. And so I find it kind of interesting that Royal Skousen actually puts the blame on Joseph Smith for why we don't have the complete original manuscript. He puts it into this building that seeps with water and gets destroyed. Point being is, how did these errors creep into the original.
And Russell M. Nelson goes on and gives another story, this involving Emma Smith. In 1856, gave this account. Listen to what he quotes her saying. "When my husband was translating the Book of Mormon, I wrote a part of it as he dictated each sentence word for word. And when he came to proper names he could not pronounce or long words, he spelled them out. And while I was writing them, if I made any mistake in spelling, he would stop me and correct my spelling, although it was impossible for him to see how I was writing them down at the time. Even the word Sarah he could not pronounce at first, but had to spell it, and I would pronounce it for him. When he stopped for any purpose at any time, he would, when he commenced again, begin where he left off without any hesitation. And one time while he was translating, he stopped suddenly, pale as a sheet, and said, 'Emma, did Jerusalem have walls around it?' When I answered yes, he replied, 'Oh, I didn't know. I was afraid I had been deceived.' He had such a limited knowledge of history at that time that he did not even know that Jerusalem was surrounded by walls."
If Joseph Smith didn't even know Jerusalem had walls around it, it shows how little of the Bible he was actually familiar with. But still, the fact is it seems like it's a pretty meticulous process that's going on to make sure that whatever is written down reflects precisely what the gold plates had on them. Would you not agree?
Mm-hmm.
So then how do these errors creep in? Let's get the story straight, guys, because if I put Royal Skousen on the stand to explain how it came about, and then I put, let's say, Emma Smith on the stand, or I put David Whitmer on the stand, I'm getting contradictory messages here. So what really took place? Of course, I think most Mormons would go with the most faith-promoting story.
Now, many Mormons might say Joseph Smith did not have the education or the ability to be able to come up with a story such as this.
One minute Joseph Smith is portrayed as this dolt, and then the next minute he's portrayed as an intelligent, smart man whose intelligence seems to surpass everyone else's. I guess it all depends on the circumstance as to what type of Joseph Smith the Mormons are going to describe. I think we need to take the story as a whole and make our decision there. Tomorrow we're going to continue looking at this article dealing with the seer stone, because it is big news that the Mormon Church would come out and admit this. But the sad part is most Mormons probably don't remember that leaders were saying that Joseph Smith never used the seer stone in translating the Book of Mormon. We're going to talk about that tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wondered where you can go in downtown Salt Lake City to browse the largest inventory of Christian books on the Mormon religion? Well, the answer is the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located at 1358 South and West Temple, just across the street from the Smith Ballpark. Whether you're looking for a basic introduction or a more scholarly work, Sandra Tanner and her staff will assist you in finding the appropriate resources so you can better understand the LDS religion. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore also carries dozens of books that Sandra and her husband Gerald have written over the past five decades. This includes their comprehensive work, Mormonism, Shadow or Reality. So, once again, if you have questions about the LDS faith, there is always somebody behind the desk who would be more than happy to assist you. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and on Saturdays from 1 to 5. Remember, when in Salt Lake City, be sure to come check out the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located right there at 1358 South and West Temple.